is Rhode Island's longest running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program. Well, with that, after running up and breaking through that psychological number of 20,000 on the Dow, stocks closed today, little changed after hitting those new record highs as traders started to assess a number of key earnings numbers that were out there. And, you know, from the market's perspective, when you break through a psychological ceiling like the 20,000 level, you got to remember the number 20,000 is not technically significant in terms of the numbers that the analysts would look for. But there's psychological value to these things, breaking through, especially big round numbers like 10,000. Now, remember, 10,000 happened back in 2009, and here we are now, basically 7 years later or so, seven or eight years later, breaking through the doubling level. Now, that means you had to go up about 9% per year on average to get to this particular point. So gives you some sense of perspective. But I think it was a favorable sign that ultimately the market held on to the level, breaking through 20,000. If it had gone up, and actually it did break through 2,100 at one point during the course of the day today, but then pulled back a bit. But it did stay above 20,000, and that was probably significant, not giving up that milestone. Among the companies reporting their earnings today were Ford and Dow component Caterpillar. Ford did match earnings estimates while topping some sales expectations, which is really what they would want to see. They would want to see that not only top-line revenue had improved, but also that the earnings, which could reflect top-line revenue plus improvements in expense management, all of that can have an effect on your bottom line. Caterpillar beat earnings estimates, but did in fact fall short on the revenue side. Alphabet, Intel, Microsoft, PayPal, and Starbucks are among companies that will all be reporting in the time frame we're in right now, right after the bell, which was at 4 o'clock. You know, companies are still able to beat the bottom line, but are having a bit of a tougher time doing that on the top line. In other words, growing their sales and growing their revenue. Now, that could be a trend, perhaps, as I mentioned, in the area of cost-cutting. 30% of the S&P 500 companies have reported quarterly earnings as of this morning, with about 70% exceeding analyst expectations on the bottom line, and about 56% beating sales estimates on the top line. Both sets of numbers obviously are good and consistent with what we've been looking at on quarterly numbers for quite some time now. Now, we've reached the heart of the Q4 earnings season. The deluge of releases from the next couple of weeks will confirm whether the final 3 months of 2016 really marked a disappointment for companies on a relative basis or not, whether ultimately it was a good fourth quarter. But of course, they'll start refocusing a lot of their attention on, well, what's the first quarter and second quarter of 2017 going to represent? What kind of opportunity will there be? And is there some way of understanding, you know, how the upcoming new administration with a new president, a new structure perhaps in Congress, will the House and Senate Republicans leadership, will they in fact work well, you know, like happy partners with the new president? It's hard to say. But all of those things and the success of that partnership will have a lot to do with how well our economy does and how well the corporations that make up our economy do. To be sure, the bar for this period was a bit higher than in previous quarters, so what we call the relative comps, the comparisons, are going to get tougher and tougher as time goes on. Some of the earlier comparisons made it easy for these companies to beat estimates. The hurdle only gets more difficult for corporate executives to clear over the next year, as extremely sanguine bottom-line forecasts have hardly budged at all. Now, the Dow was up about 32 points for the day. As I said, at one point, it was up considerably more than that. United Health Group and Home Depot contributed probably the most to the Dow today. The S&P 500 broke above 2,300 for the first time before falling back 0.07%. with healthcare falling 0.6% to lead decliners. The NASDAQ ended off 0.02%. In other words, these numbers, you could honestly say and feel you're being relatively accurate by saying, well, the market was flat for that period, having hit an all-time higher earlier in the session, but pulling back a bit as we get closer to 4 p.m. Now, the S&P 500 did, in fact, confirmed a breakout from its consolidation phase yesterday, supporting some short-term upside follow-through and minimizing the likelihood of a significant pullback in the near term, according to technical analysts from the company BTIG. They believe that the breakout overrules the bearish takeaways that you can derive from the low level of the VIX, which is the volatility index, and the weak seasonal influences that you often see in the month of February, for now at least. Now, the volatility index, widely considered the best gauge of fear in the market, hits its all lowest levels in more than 2 years. It did that this past week. Actually, it did it yesterday. It held around 10.9 on Thursday. The three major U.S. indices that we track, which, of course, is the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and the Dow, closed at all-time highs yesterday, with the Dow, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of this discussion, breaking above 20,000 and closing above 20,000 for the very first time. And yes, it's not statistically significant, but it is psychologically important. If you look at it from a technical perspective, stocks finally broke from that six-week range that they'd been trading in, a trading range. The market's giving the Trump administration more than the benefit of the doubt with some of these numbers, according to analysts from Charles Schwab. One of the principal catalysts in sending stocks to these record levels were a series of executive orders signed by the president, including two that facilitate the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, as well as the North Dakota Access pipeline. Until we get the Fed meeting in March, many analysts don't really see anything that could push us lower from the points that we are right now, according to Fredericks over at Schwab. Now, the Federal Reserve is scheduled to hold its first meeting of the year on January the 30th through February the 1st, though most analysts do not expect the central bank to actually move or change monetary policy at that particular meeting. I think that the Federal Reserve is probably going to be doing what a great many investors are doing right now, which is holding their breath and taking a close look at what's happening with looking carefully what kind of proposals and policy recommendations or discussions at very least are coming out of the Oval Office, and what kind of commentary do we also get from the Senate and the House of Representatives. Initial jobless claims in the area of economic news jumped about 22,000 up to 259,000, but they've remained below the magic 300,000 number for about 99 weeks straight. Uninterrupted. That's the longest stretch that we've seen since 1970. Now, the U.S. IHS Market Services Company, the PMI number, showed that the sector expanded at its fastest pace since 2015, hitting 55.1. That's moving up from 53.9. Now, anecdotal evidence suggests that stronger domestic demand and improving business confidence have led to a bit of a robust rise in service sector activity at the start of 2017, according to IHS Market. New home sales fell 10.4% in the month of December, however. Now, U.S. Treasury yields fell slightly, benchmark 10-year note hovering around 2.5%. That's the yield. If the yields are dropping, it means the value of the bonds may be rising a bit. A little bit more demand for those bonds, while the short-term two-year note traded around 1.22. The dollar regained some ground against a basket of currencies having broken below 100 earlier this week. It traded 0.5% higher in afternoon trading today, with the euro right around $1.06, 1.06%, and the yen near 114. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa here on AM 790, your home of talking business. Delighted to have you with me. Stick around. I'll be right back after this brief break. Well, okay, so we've had some fun in the earlier part of the week. We broke through 20,000 on the Dow. We continue to see new records being established on the S&P 500 as well. And the NASDAQ has had some impressive numbers as well. What it does do when people start talking about, record numbers and they start talking about markets that are no longer cheap, I think there's very few people would look at the various indices that are out there now, the companies that make up these indexes and say, they have a big long way to run. I think there's not a lot of what they'd call low hanging fruit out there in real terms. And so you have to start looking to, well, what will drive prices higher from here, if at all? And the answer has to be monetary and fiscal policy, both here in the United States and overseas. Now, monetary policy is what the Federal Reserve does. In other words, the cost of money, essentially, the types of controls that they employ to keep us from engaging in what we'd call hyperinflation, keeping the cost of money at reasonable levels, and of course keeping our nation's workers employed. Policies that support that are what we fall under the category of monetary policy. Policies that deal with the areas of like tax reform, like spending on infrastructure, a whole series of other general policies, including those related to the stimulating trade. That would be under the fiscal policy category, and that's what comes out of Washington. It's what comes out of the White House, the Congress, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. We've seen very, very little in the way of fiscal policy over the last several years. Most of what has driven this market and most of what brought us out of the bear market that we saw back in 2008 in that recession was, in fact, driven by monetary policy and the Federal Reserve. So you get to 20,000 on the Dow, and you say, well, where do we stand today? I mean, is this economy and the world economy, is it postured and positioned to move higher from here? Or is this you've heard of buy low, sell high. Is this the sell high? I mean, have we gotten up to a really great number here now? And we're in positive territory at the beginning here in the first month of 2017. I said, is this the sell high that everyone talked about? Well, you got to look at reality. Great Britain is leaving the European Union under Brexit, right? You've heard of all that, right? We now have a person in the White House who's, by any standard, considered to be a protectionist. Whether that's good or bad, I guess it depends on your political philosophy. The front runner in France's presidential election also wants to get out of the euro. Yet, paradoxically, investors have concluded that the world is getting less risky, not more. Now, the end result of all this is there's a hunger for the shares that have carried the Dow Jones Industrial Average over the 20,000 mark yesterday for the very first time. Now, it's hard to explain this using economic fundamentals. The stock market historically is a mirror of the economy. It's a financial representation of the environment that we live in that stimulates and supports growth, work, saving, and spending. The value of the goods and services that we produce here in the United States are called gross domestic product. And if the GDP is growing, then we are growing as a nation. And if it's declining for a certain period of time, we are in recession. Now, economic fundamentals have improved since November the 8th and the election of Donald Trump. And maybe they haven't improved by much, but they've actually improved. Now, after the election, economists surveyed by the Wall Street Journal added 0.3 percentage point to expected growth over the next 2 years. At their December meeting, the Federal Reserve officials barely touched their growth forecasts. Analysts' profit estimates haven't changed much out there very much. What has changed is how investors look or assess the balance between upside and downside risk. This is what we're talking about here. We had a caller before called in from a car phone, and he wanted to know, could this bull market that we've been in set us up for a bear market, a sizable decline? And how does this compare to what occurred about almost a decade ago, which would have been the bear market in 2008. Well, remember something, that it was driven by the fear, not so much of valuations in the stock market. It was driven by the fear of a meltdown in the global financial markets. It was more of a credit-related bear market. Credit meaning the availability of money, of capital, the ability to operate, to borrow. Money flowing through the system literally was freezing up and not moving at all. The concern was, and it's what the government had to do, it's what the Obama administration inherited coming off of December of 08 and into 09, and it resulted in the need to infuse vast amounts of capital, almost $1 trillion of capital, into the markets themselves through the TARP bill, which, you know, they kept calling it the bailout. But they didn't bail out the companies. The U.S. government was funding a dozen or so of the largest financial institutions in the country, largest banking institutions, pumping cash into them with the understanding that those same lenders would pump that cash into Main Street, into lending, into other areas of the economy to free up this frozen financial wasteland that was developing. And it wasn't perfect, but it did in fact work. And it brought us out of recession as we moved into 09. And in the years since that time has kept us growing, albeit at a rate of about 2% per year on average, which has not been particularly impressive, but it has been a uniquely long recovery over that period. I'm only stating these historic facts to give you some idea that, number one, there is no comparison between the environment we were in back in the late 2007, early 2008, and throughout that year, the unique environment we were in. People have no idea how close we were to a overall global financial meltdown. They really, really do not understand that. There are very few people, if at all, who are alive today who could actually speak from personal experience about what it felt like to live during the Depression back in the 1920s, 1929 and early 1930 range. They hear about Depression. My parents are alive and they're in their early 90s, but even they were children during the Depression. And anyone who was working, dealing with the financial markets, maybe even at the banking level or just trying to run a business or just trying to keep a job, they understood the difference of what was happening in that kind of an environment. We were very, very close to not a recession back in 08, but to a depression. It could have happened. So if you want, like it or not, politically, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, you can give the existing administration, actually some bipartisan efforts between the outgoing Bush administration and the incoming Obama administration, the efforts that were in fact made to stabilize and salvage this economy, the financial system. It was an extraordinary effort. Some risks were taken, and thankfully they did work. And the bull market that we've enjoyed this last several years has been a result of that. Now, one solid bit of evidence of rising risk in terms of things, or maybe risk appetites, is what we call the divergence between stocks and bonds. After Great Britain voted to leave the EU back in June of last year, Treasury bond prices soared in yields, which move in the opposite direction, plunged below 1.4%. Now, these are historic lows. That wasn't justified by any plausible path for inflation. Rather, it reflected a desperate pursuit for protection from threats ranging from a euro breakup. In other words, people were talking about, well, this is going to be the precursor of the entire eurozone breaking up, all 17 countries going separate ways, and, of course, whatever catastrophe could come out of that, or to a more deeply negative central bank system and central bank set of rates. By the eve of the election that we've just experienced, yields had returned to around 1.9% from 1.4%. And since then have shot up to 2.5%. Now, we're talking about the 10-year U.S. Treasury here. Only some of this is because investors expect a quicker pace of Fed tightening. Maybe they expect a little bit of that. Most of it is simply because in a less risky world, investors aren't as hungry for super safe assets. Back, like I said, at the beginning of the year, maybe they were. The value of treasuries went up because there was a demand for treasuries. When the value goes up, the yields come down. That's where you saw a 1.4% U.S. Treasury instrument. That same shift in risk appetites is why stocks have gone in the opposite direction to bonds right now. In the month of November, investors were expecting to earn 6.3% percentage points more by owning risky stocks instead of safer bonds, according to a finance professor over at the New York University, NYU. By Wednesday, that premium had shrunk to 5.7 percentage points. That is still historically high, and it provides some cushion at a time when the market looks expensive by some conventional measures. But stocks are now trading at 21 times the past 12 months' earnings, compared with 15 when the Dow crossed the 15,000 mark in 2013, though far less than the 24 times when it topped 10,000 during the dot-com bubble in 1999. The market is a lot cheaper today than it was back in 1999, early 2000, where we came into a 30-month bear market, where the market lost about a third of its value following the 1990s dot-com bubble. So the answer to the question is, I doubt that this bull market that we're in now is setting us up for a big loss. However, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some things that maybe prudent individuals who are investors and who might want to remain as investors. But what do you do to be considered a prudent investor when the market is getting a little bit frothy, a little rich around the edges? How do you protect yourself as an investor if, in fact, we're coming to the end, slowly but surely, from what has been a pretty long bull market? I'm Don Sowa. This is the Money Talk program on AM 790, your home of talking business. I'll be right back. We're back with the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa, delighted to have you here with me. We talked a little bit about the direction the market's been going in. Actually, the general direction it has gone since November the 8th, when we had the presidential elections and Donald Trump took the crown, shall we say. We've had some ups and downs about it, but the general direction has been higher. The real question will be, is are investors getting carried away? Well, maybe at some level. I mean, both Congress and Mr. Trump both want to cut taxes, but haven't agreed how, and will be probably hemmed in by the deficit a little bit right now, where we have a lot of debt out there, and just how much deficit spending is this administration willing to do, and how much will Congress let them do? Nor does Congress have much appetite for President Trump's infrastructure push. Now, yes, they all agree that they want to improve the U.S., our nation's infrastructure. They desperately need that. But for much of President Obama's financial and health care laws, who knows, they may actually survive a lot of these negotiations. Direction matters, though. Even if regulations and taxes don't ease much, that's a notable contrast to the rather toughening that existed under Barack Obama, which President Hillary Clinton probably would have continued at some level. Similarly, while recent upgrades to the economic outlook have been somewhat minor, they are a bit of a change from the serial downgrades that have dogged the expansion from 2009. Now, this also explains why the market was only briefly set back after the Federal Reserve raised rates last month and penciled in 3 increases for this year. Bianco Research, which is an investment advisory firm, notes that this was the first time in 2 years that officials' median rate projection for 2017 had actually risen. Now, this simply shows that the Federal Reserve has reached the same conclusion that the market has. Risks to the economy no longer point down. So that's an improvement. People feel a little bit better about that. When they feel a little bit better, they're willing to take on a little more risk. And while there is very little sign yet that the economy has broken out of the low growth rut that we've seen for the last 7 years, that too could change. Now, if the sort of animal spirits mirror those of the market, capital spending and risk-taking could start to revive, dragging productivity higher. You got to remember, if you look at the S&P 500, look at the balance sheets of these 500 companies. They are holding far more cash than they have at almost any time in the past. Now, the market does need a little bit of a reality check. The U.S. expansion is more than 7 years old and retains little momentum from using up spare capacity from the recession. At 4.7%, the unemployment rate is at levels the Federal Reserve considers full employment. Now, indeed, recessions usually happen with unemployment around or below 5%. Now, 8 years of ultra-easy monetary policy have left a bit of a worry, a bit of a worrisome legacy of inflated asset prices and financial engineering that's going on. The New York-based economic consultant Gail Fossler says corporate profit growth has slowed, companies' cash flow barely covers capital investment and dividends, and the bond market is signaling that the Fed has to actually raise interest rates more quickly. The market wants the Fed to raise rates more quickly. Ms. Fossler says there are the ingredients of a little bit of a financial squeeze out there that could trigger a little bit of a recessionary pressure in and around the year 2008. Now, yes, we've been in a growth period. The word recession means that the economy is not growing. It is, in fact, shrinking. Put it this way, it may still be growing, but not at the pace that it was. If it's growing less than the pace that it was, that's recessionary over a certain number of quarters. Now, if she's right, the Dow Jones might spend a little bit of time revisiting, the number 20,000 from above and below, as did have tended to happen after it broke through 10,000 in the year 1999. The markets could potentially move into a trading range. Now, the question that I got from a caller was, should we expect, coming off of a 7 or 8 year bull market, should we expect a major bear market? Well, that might not be the case, but you might in fact have what will look an awful lot like a very volatile market. And it could be a market that moves within a trading range that has that magic 20,000 on the Dow as the central average number. You drop below that a little bit, 2 or 3%. You go above it a little bit, 2 or 3%. But ultimately, you could go out over a couple of years and still say, well, I really haven't made much money in that time frame. Now, here's the other side of this. Not all sectors of the market react exactly the same. There'll be some sectors that could be doing well in the environment we're in economically. There could be other sectors that may not do as well. You know, there are consumer staples, which are the category of the market that people buy and spend money on, such as, medication and food. There's a whole number of areas that they go into. Companies like Johnson & Johnson, some of the medical delivery companies like Walgreens, Walmart, CVS. Those companies make money even in a recession. So the question is, how much of these consumer staples do you own in your portfolio, or are you still sitting in the more aggressive, smaller, mid-sized companies that have done well over the last few years? Investors shouldn't forget that Donald Trump's fondness for meddling in business and for punishing foreign trading partners, and that could undo a lot of the goodwill that a business-friendly tax reform might generate. Again, he's going to be very careful in this, I don't even know what you want to call it. The word meddling is the word that we used in an article I was reading. Yeah, and it is meddling. It's involving yourself in areas where governments and especially presidents should not normally be involving themselves. Again, it's a balancing act that he has to do. Will he be successful in his balancing act in these areas or not? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to watch, obviously, very, very carefully. Now, it isn't that rising trade barriers will cause a recession. There is little historic precedent for that. You got to look carefully. There are things out there. Historians now agree that the Smoot-Hawley tariff back in 1930 was only a minor contribution to the Depression. It was a contribution, but only a minor one. If companies repatriate production from overseas, that could temporarily boost investment in jobs. The real problem is that protectionism, protectionism means foreign products aren't as readily available to satisfy strong spending at home which leads to inflationary pressures and higher interest rates. In other words, if you start adding taxes and tariffs and everything else onto foreign goods, like the president announced today, the possibility of a 20% tax on all products coming from Mexico into the United States. Well, a lot of the products that we use every day, believe it or not, there's a great many products that are part of our normal spending in the U.S. economy that are not made in the United States any longer. They are now made, in many cases, outside the U.S., including Mexico. If we're paying more money, because people are going to still buy the product. If there's a tax being applied to them, then the cost of purchasing that product by American consumers goes up. That is inflationary. If you have that going on and interest rates rise at the same time, you may be running into a bit of a problem. It also corrodes international cooperation, and by the way, it destabilizes geopolitical relationships that we have. Now, what this suggests is that the next decade for blue chip company profits are going to be maybe a little bit tougher in acquiring those profits than we've seen in the last decade. Investors should adjust expectations accordingly. Now, what does that really mean? What does adjusting expectations accordingly mean? There's no better time, perhaps, than right now while we are talking about it. Right now before it has become a major problem. Right now while we are actually speculating and trying to estimate the impact of proposals which are ultimately still policy proposals in some areas, before they become reality, this may be the time to take a close look at your portfolio. Is it designed appropriately for the level of risk that exists in the economy today? Is it designed appropriately for the uncertainties that come along with a new administration, a new potential government environment? We have to wait and see what kind of policies emerge, and at what level will the Congress support the president's ideas on a number of different issues. It's a very, very complex program. I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the defensive things that some investors might want to do with their investment portfolio in the environment we're in. I'm Don Soa. We'll be right back with more AM 790's Money Talk. And we're back. I'm Don Soa. If you're just tuning into the show here on AM 790, this is Money Talk. In the last segment, I was talking about, or I was asking the question, I said, are you actually thinking right now, as we broke through the good news yesterday of breaking through 20,000 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and all the indices are hitting all-time highs, for me to suggest to you that maybe this is a great time to look at the allocation of your investment plan? Well, first of all, it's the start of a brand new year. There's nothing wrong with the start of a brand new year. It's all the new New Year's resolutions, you know, thoughtful planning. But it's also a good time to evaluate who you are and whether your portfolio is not only consistent and appropriate for where you are in your investment life. How close are you to that point in time when you may need to use this money for something, including retirement? But it's also your asset allocation must also be sensitive to the environment in which you're investing. So, yeah, look at your portfolio should reflect you and who you are. And some of that is emotional. Some of that's risk tolerance, your temperament. But it's also a logical side to this. Have you been paying attention? Do you know what's happening in the economy and the world around you? Do you understand the things around you that can affect your money, your investments? Now, again, reaching the high numbers, that it may strike you as a little bit strange that we would be talking about possibly becoming a little more defensive in your investment plan and your allocation, since a bear market appears to be nowhere in sight. In fact, the Dow, like I mentioned, broke through 20,000, and we retained that above that level today. We didn't break back below 20. But don't forget that it will be too late to prepare for a bear market after it's already started. In other words, after you tune into Money Talk or a similar show and they tell you, yeah, we're in a bear market. Using the semi-official definition of a bear market is a 20% drop from the high or more. Most bear markets are well more than halfway over. You're halfway into it, down more than 10 to 12% before people start to recognize that they're in a bear market environment, that in fact the direction we're going in will in fact take the valuations in the market down below 20. Now, you may also be disciplined, you know, to, you know, in some ways of looking at things, you might be disinclined to make defensive changes out of the belief that, you know, such changes may be costly to you. You know, may not be necessary. Maybe you'll miss out on upside opportunities. And that's sort of like a high-priced insurance policy. But that's not what history teaches us. Assuming that the future is like the past, you'll give up next to nothing by shifting your portfolio right away into stocks that perform better in the early stages of a bear market, even if the bull market were to persist for a while longer. In other words, becoming defensive, still being a stock investor, but being more defensive in orientation, you might not end up being hurt by that. I mean, history supports that. Take stocks of the smallest companies, which famously have significantly outperformed big, big, large cap stocks over the last 90 years. You might assume that the average small company performs spectacularly in the final blow-off stage of a bull market, and that you therefore would leave a lot of money on the table if you prematurely shifted into a more defensive large cap portfolio allocation. But that assumption is not accurate according to data compiled by the University of Chicago professors Eugene Fama and Dartmouth professor Kenneth French. They wrote books on this stuff. In the last 3 months of all bull markets since the mid-1920s, there has been no statistically significant difference in the average returns of small and large cap stocks. So by moving from small cap to large cap, you didn't punish yourself and miss out on remaining upside in the small companies. That means that there's no reason in final stages of a bull market, since you can't predict the timing, the dates, or the extent of the change. There's no reason in the final stages of a bull market to incur the extra risk of smaller companies. You can make the moves at any time. And once a bear market begins, you'll be glad that you made the shift. But you can't predict it. Nobody can. There's no historical precedent for it. During the first months of bear markets, the relatively defensive large cap stocks perform significantly better than the small caps. So by moving into the relatively defensive larger company value type stocks, you didn't end up hurting yourself. They did okay. They did well at the end of a bull market, and they may have done better than the small caps at the beginning of a bear market. Not a bad philosophy, huh? And by the way, you don't have to make this move all at once. You could do it in increments, but it's not a stupid thing to do. Now, we could reach an entirely different conclusion if we were in the early, very early stages of a bull market. History teaches us that's when the riskier small caps really do very, very well. Now, advice is tailored on the assumption that we're far closer to the end of a bull market than to the beginning of a bull market. We've been in a multi-year bull market since 2009. So yeah, we're closer to the end of a bull market, even if it lasts for a couple of years. We're closer to the end. The rationale for making defensive moves now rather than later is even stronger when deciding between growth and value stocks, two different styles of management, two different types of companies. Researchers place stocks on the growth value dimension according to their price to book ratios. These are formulas. Those with low ratios are considered value stocks, while those with opposite extremes are deemed growth stocks. According to the Fama French data, value beats growth not only in bear markets, but also in the last months of a bull market, the period we're in now. So you shouldn't hold on to growth stocks out of the mistaken belief that this category does especially well as a bull market approaches a top or an end. Regardless of whether the bull market still has more life to it, and it may very well, or a bear market is about to begin, the average value stock should beat the average growth stock in this time frame. Only if you think we're in the early stages of a bull market would you want to reconsider. Hey, we're going to talk about this some more, folks. This is great stuff. It's important stuff. And it's about you and your money today and tomorrow and moving forward. This is Don Sowa. You're listening to AM 790 and the Money Talk program. Tune in tomorrow at 5. Steve Bovee will be here with more Money Talk. Have a good night.